from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
Prayer impacts the life of the biggest city in America, and it changes the life of one man on a baseball field in Virginia. That's coming up on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. As we approach the celebration of the birth of our Savior, I hope you're able to spend time with friends and family this Christmas weekend, reflecting on the ultimate gift, God sending His Son to a little village called Bethlehem, so that one day we would have eternal life. And one of those people who has experienced the life-changing power of God joined Washington Watch Live host Tony Perkins on Monday.
All right, on the morning of June 14th, 2017, a practice field for the annual congressional baseball game was filled with Republicans practicing, getting ready. And then a man opened fire on the Republican team, wounding five, including Louisiana Congressman Steve Scalise, nearly fatally. With us now is Congressman Steve Scalise. He is the House Majority Whip in the 115th Congress. He represents the 1st Congressional District of Louisiana and is here to discuss the heart-pounding story of how he survived a mass shooting and his inspiring return to Congress. It's all in his new book, Back in the Game, One Gunman, Countless Heroes, and the Fight for My Life. Congressman Steve Scalise, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, great to be back with you, and Merry Christmas to you as well.
Well, thank you. We can say Merry Christmas again freely. Of course, you could always say it here on this program, but anywhere you go, feel free to say Merry Christmas. I want to talk about this because this, especially this time of year, this is meaningful for you. You and I have had these conversations. Life takes on a new meaning after an experience like you had, and you tell really the number of times during the course of your recovery, or actually in the days after the shooting, that you were just barely hanging on to life.
Yeah, Tony, there were a number of times, including when I was wheeled into the hospital, I had a zero blood pressure. And any medical professional will tell you, it's rare that somebody makes it through that. And so there were a lot of miracles. I actually, in the book, Back in the Game, I talk about what I call the little miracles, just things that happen. Some that might be coincidence and some that you can't explain that all equate to one thing. And that's God was on that field looking out for me and all my colleagues that morning.
Well, you talk about those little things. It's just the right people being in the right place. You had a security detail, a Capitol Police that happened to be there, or else there would have been no one there to defend the Republican members of Congress that were on the field. And the situation
That's right.
would have been a lot worse.
Yeah, you know, the shooter came with, of course, the element of surprise. He had a semi-automatic weapon with unlimited rounds of ammunition, and it's a baseball field. And, you know, we're not expecting something like that. And if he were able to just come on unabashed, he would have just been able to pick us off like sitting ducks. And that was his intention, Tony. But, you know, God intervened, and a lot of heroes intervened, too. And I talk about them in the book as well, the Capitol Police agents, David Bailey, and Crystal Griner, who both were shot during the shootout and kept going at the shooter until they took him down, literally risking their lives for others. And, you know, those other kinds of stories of selflessness and sacrifice and heroism that, you know, we don't see it enough in society today. And so it was good to be able to tell the story through their eyes.
And that includes, Steve, also one of your colleagues, Brad Winstrup, a Army Reserve officer and combat medic, who just happened to be there, was able to respond to you and literally save your life.
Yeah, he did. You know, Brad is a congressman from Ohio. He's a surgeon. He was a combat surgeon in Iraq. And he normally leaves before the time that the shooting occurred, around 7 in the morning, is when he normally leaves. He had an 8 o'clock meeting, and that morning it got canceled. And so he decided to stay later instead and, you know, was taking batting practice in the batting cage. Where he normally would have been gone. And, you know, he waited, watched the shooter, and as soon as the shooter went down, he came to my aid and applied a tourniquet. My doctor said if I didn't have that tourniquet to stop the bleeding, I wouldn't have made it to the hospital. And so Brad was clearly a hero and saved my life along the way.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest, Congressman Steve Scalise. He joins us from an airport, always traveling, always busy, even at this time of year. But he's got a new book out. It'd make a great gift. It really tells his story, kind of begins with him emerging as the whip for the majority in the United States Congress, but then goes into what happened on June 14th and the recovery. And in this, Steve, you talk a lot. In fact, you and I discussed this shortly after the shooting when you were on your path of recovery. There on the field, there as you were lying on the field, you were praying and in faith. Your faith in God has grown. Your prayer life has grown. That has been a key part of this journey for you.
Tony, it has. I've always had a strong faith. It's not something I talked about a lot, but every night I pray to God. Always have. And so I was just, you know, laying on the field as I crawled away from the shooter. And, you know, once my arms gave out, I crawled about 20 feet. And once my arms gave out, I just laid there, and the first thing I thought of is I've got to start praying. And as soon as I started praying, literally just putting this in God's hands, I felt this unbelievable sense of calm. And, you know, it was, I heard the shooting going on. I mean, it's still a shootout, and for all I know, I could be next. And, you know, I just prayed. First thing I thought of, I've got a 10-year-old, she was 10 years old at the time, 11-year-old daughter, and I prayed. I said, God, please don't let Madison walk down the aisle alone. It was just the first visual that came into my head. You know, and I prayed to see my family again. Prayed for a lot of things, and I got to tell you, Tony, God delivered every one of them, and he answered some real heady prayers that morning.
So, Steve, on this side, what would you say is the on the side of the shooting? What would you say is the thing that how it has impacted you the most, in the way you go about each and every day?
Well, I mean, it really sharpened my focus on what's important in life. And, you know, I've always had a strong faith. I, you know, love my family, love my job. And, you know, there's a lot of other things in your life that I call clutter now, things that you do that aren't as important. And I think, if anything, I just renewed my focus on the things that really do matter in life and try to remove some of the clutter and make sure I'm spending every day as well as I can to, you know, to just do the things that are important.
You know, in writing a book, and I've written a couple, and, you know, you have these thoughts and ideas, and I know you worked with a team. When you finish the project, or maybe it was during the course of the project, was there anything that really kind of jumped out at you for the first time? You said, you know what, I never really realized that aspect.
You know, of course, you're on a timeline, and as I've been told by other people who have written books, it's good that the publisher gives you a deadline. Because it seems like you're never completely finished with the work itself as you start to put together something like this. And I think, if anything, you know, it just made me appreciate more the people that came together to keep me alive, because I had to relive a lot of it. And there were some things I didn't know. You know, the first 3 days I was unconscious. And so my wife and I talked about some of those things, but we went through all of it, literally a timeline, almost minute by minute. And, you know, and it just made you look back at it all. It, not, you know, in the day-by-day fighting for your life kind of spirit, but in the, you know, wow, look at these incredible people that came together. And, you know, and I've talked about this because, you know, we talk about politics a lot. And the president is always under assault by the media. And I talked about the fact that he and Melania came the night of the shooting to the hospital and really just gave some incredible comfort to my wife at really the toughest time. And then he would call me randomly. I'd get this phone call, and it'd be the White House asking if you want to talk to the president at 8 o'clock at night or something. And he'd just call to check on me and see how I was doing. And it's just the kind of guy he is, and it's a side of him that I think a lot of people don't get to see. I wish more did.
It's one of those rare moments when you actually see people come together. I mean, Cedric Richmond, one of our colleagues from the Louisiana House, who's now a member of Congress on the Democratic side of the aisle, I mean, he was there as well to encourage you and support you.
Yeah, Cedric is a dear friend. He's a liberal Democrat from New Orleans, but, you know, we served, like you and I did, in the State House together and formed a real bond and a personal friendship. And, you know, and I think, if anything, in politics, it just reminds us that we all have beliefs. And nobody agrees with everybody on anything. And, you know, if you're having a disagreement with your friends or your spouse, you're not going to disown them because you disagree with them. You know, you have the disagreement and you move on to something else. In politics, it almost seems like too often it becomes personal. And, you know, Cedric and I have always kept our differences aside and maintained a friendship. And he literally was the first person to the hospital in his baseball uniform after the shooting.
You're listening to Washington Watch. My guest, Congressman Steve Scalise, talking about a just-released book, Back in the Game, One Gunman, Countless Heroes, and the Fight for Life. You can pick it up bookstores anywhere. Great Christmas gift. Great read, by the way. Steve, before I let you go, I know you got to catch a flight, but this story of survival certainly is going to put you into a good posture for surviving the 116th Congress, where the Republicans will be in the minority. What's ahead? You've been selected as the whip for the minority in that Congress. What are you looking toward and what would you like to see accomplished in the 116th?
Well, Tony, it's going to be a battle because Nancy Pelosi is going to become Speaker again. And, you know, as much as I'd like to say there's going to be a lot of things we're going to work on, I think the biggest thing that we're going to be doing is battling to make sure we don't lose ground. You know, we've gotten our economy moving again by working with President Trump to cut everybody's tax rates. And it's working. It's incredibly effective at helping rebuild our middle class. I don't want to see us go backward there. But look, you and I have fought incredibly hard to advance the cause of life. And there are Hyde Amendment riders. There are other riders that are in current law that I am not going to allow us to go backward on. If Pelosi wants to do more in the efforts of Planned Parenthood funding or abortion services, we're going to battle that. And, you know, we've got a big ruling that's coming out of the White House to block Title X funding from being used for Planned Parenthood group or any group that provides abortion, Tony. So you know how important that's going to be that ruling go through the whole process. And I'm sure Pelosi will try to unravel it in the House and we'll battle it. So there are going to be more the things that we disagree on. We've got to make sure that we're letting the public know what's at stake in these battles, so that we can keep people engaged and ultimately retake the House in 2 years.
Well, there's a lot to be done, but in the meantime, enjoy your time with family as you celebrate this Christmas. And as always, Steve, great to have you on the program.
Thanks so much, Tony. Always great to be with you. And again, Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners.
You can find out more about Representative Steve Scalise when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider helping Family Research Council reach their year-end financial goals by simply clicking on the donate button. Your help can make all the difference. That website, once more, is tonyperkins.com.
This Christmas, give a gift with purpose. Your gift to Family Research Council enables us to advance faith, family, and freedom. Together, we will work to protect life, marriage, and religious liberty in our country. If you give before December 31st to FRC, your gift will be doubled. Be fruitful in your gift giving this season. Call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/2018. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Blessed New Year.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Earlier this week, Pastor Carter Conlon of Times Square Church in New York City joined FRC President Tony Perkins to talk about the amazing work that God is doing in a place that many don't think of when they think of spiritual revival. Here's Tony Perkins and Pastor Carter Conlon.
Tell our listeners a little bit about your journey in coming to Times Square Church and serving alongside David Wilkerson.
You want me to start from the beginning?
Absolutely. We got a few minutes.
I was, it's strange, you know, I was preaching a message in a church that I pastored in Canada called When a Prayer Becomes a Cry. And when I went home, I said to my wife, Teresa, I said, the strangest thing today. I said, all throughout that message, the name David Wilkerson kept coming into my mind. I didn't know that much about him. I knew he was a preacher. I knew he had written the cross and the switchblade. But I just couldn't get his name out of my mind to the point where it was a little disturbing to me. 3 years later, I get a call from Leonard Ravenhill, a friend of his, who said, I've heard a message you preached somewhere, and I want to talk to you. He said, would you fly to Texas and spend 3 days with me in my home? So I didn't know much about him. I just knew he was a writer on revival, and it had always interested me. So I went to see him, and for 3 days, he just poured his heart into mine from 7 in the morning till 7 at night. And at the end of the 3 days, he sat me down and he felt like he had a word from the Lord for me, which he gave to me, some of it which is fulfilled and some is yet to come. And that was it. As far as I was concerned, it was nice. I met him, and this was be in 1991. Fast forward now, 3 years later, David Wilkerson is driving back from his Bible college that he had just established, and he said he was praying. He was praying. It's what he's always did about everything. He prayed. And he said, God, I need help. This church is growing too fast, and there's too much going on, and it needs structure, and I need somebody to help me. He reached in his glove compartment to throw a couple of things out, and two, back then it was cassette tapes, fell on the floor of his car, and they were both the same speaker. Now, Leonard Ravenhill had sent those to him, but he'd never listened to them. He just stuck them in his glove compartment, and they were there for almost 3 years. So he picked them up, and he started listening to it on the way back to New York, and before he got to New York, he pulled over on the side of the road. And he called, and of course, the church was so small that my home number is on the cassette, so he ends up getting my wife, asks if I would come to speak the following Tuesday. I wasn't home. I was actually at a prayer meeting, and my wife said, yeah, he'll be there. So that was in 1994, and I've been there ever since, working with him.
And you served him in that capacity as his associate, as associate pastor there for how long?
7 years. And in the year 2001, before 9/11, we were in the middle of worshiping on a Sunday morning. Now, you have to understand, David Wilkerson is a man of prayer. He doesn't do anything outside of what God speaks to him to do. He was never a strategist. There was never a committee in the church. And we've, of course, followed that tradition. And he leaned over to me, and we're in the middle of worshiping. And he says to me, you're ready now. And I said to him, ready for what? And he says, you're ready to take the church over. You're the next pastor here. And he says, I'll be leaving and I'll be putting honor on you and I'll be traveling. And and he started speaking these things while we're still singing. And we've never had this discussion. It's not even remotely in my mind. I never aspired to lead that church, just to serve him. And later on, I asked him, I said, when did you know I would be the next pastor of the church? He said, oh, the first time you preached. He said, but the Lord said he's not ready yet. I'll tell you when he's ready. And that shows you how much we need to learn how to pray and how much prayer is an integral part of the working of God's kingdom. It's not an add-on. It's the actual fuel source of working with God. This is why I've ended up in places throughout the world I never dreamed I would go to, doing things I never dreamt I would do, and seeing results I never dreamt I could see. Now, I document it all in the book because I want people to understand prayer is not just a program. It's the essence of communication with God. And, of course, through His Word, and then through just a personal interaction with Him, He starts to speak. I mean, I could give you some examples of things He's done that have been just absolutely astounding when I was just talking to him, just communicating with him. And he would suddenly speak to my heart to do something. And when I would do it, it would always explode with life, always, without fail. Never one time has he spoken something in my heart and I've obeyed it and there's not been fruit that's come from it.
Well, I think that context is very important. As we talk about the book, It's Time to Pray. So it's not just another book. There are a lot of books out there, and publishers are always looking for people to write books that have a platform. And people love to have books about prayer. I mean, that's obviously a nice Christian thing, prayer. But this comes out of a life experience. I mean, you talk about your relationship with your father who came to know the Lord on his deathbed, the result of prayer. You just shared with, the ministry that you now had, which is phenomenal. I love Times Square Church and what God is doing there and how it's reaching and giving life into a lot of the inner city churches that are already there by partnering with Him. The history there, prayer, David Wilkerson and the prayer. So, I mean, this really is what you have lived and experienced and seen, and the key to having a successful prayer life and seeing God move through prayer is what this book is about.
Absolutely. Do we have time? How long of a story could I tell you?
You got. I'll tell you when we're over.
Yeah. Well, I was in my office a few years, about 3-4 years ago. We had been so crowded on an average Sunday that the security came to me and said, listen, we've got to do something. The fire marshals are going to shut us down if they've ever visited this church. People are standing in the aisles everywhere.
By the way, it's an old theater.
Yes.
Historic theater.
Yes.
It's a remarkable facility.
Yep. And we have about 1,500 seats in overflow in an adjacent building. And there was no room for anybody. So they said, look, we either establish a satellite church or we shut the doors at 10 after 10. But can't do both because we're jeopardizing our own future here. So the next Tuesday I was in my office and I did what I always do. I just started to pray. I said, Lord, now my prayer was, Lord, where do you want me to establish the satellite churches in the city? Because it's easy to do in Manhattan. There's a lot of facilities, a lot of vacant theaters on Sunday, and it wouldn't be that much of a stretch to do this. And the answer I got was not what I expected. The Lord spoke to my heart and said, the satellite churches are all here already in New York City, but they will never have Times Square Church's name on the door. They'll be called the First Baptist Church of 181st Street and such like. He says, I want you to seek out 100 churches in the inner city, in the most impoverished areas of the city, and I want you to underwrite them to feed the poor in their communities. And the only condition that they're to have is that they have to have a prayer meeting. Because it's insufficient to just feed the body without feeding the soul. So it was a huge commitment for us. So I took it to our board and I told the board, I said, my responsibility as your pastor is to hear from God and yours is to shut me down if I'm not, or if I've missed it or this isn't the time. Every man at that table wept. Every man at that table cried. And one man summed it up really well. He said, well, worst case scenario, a lot of hungry people are going to get fed. And so what have we got to lose? But out of that, we started a prayer meeting of those 100 pastors. And out of that, we advertised in New York City and crafted an ability for people to come in online, live, or pre- or post-meeting, and they could give us a prayer request, either by email or by text. We decided to pray for the city together, and what happened is that it went global. And we had no idea that God was handing us a worldwide prayer meeting that is now in 200 countries. And I think I've told you before, but the New York Mets found out about what we're doing.
Yeah,
and
I'm getting a
redemption pitch this August. I want you to know this. Yeah, oh, yes.
Share that story because I was going to ask that if you didn't bring that up because that is the favor of God and how God will move by you serving these other churches with God's resources. The city recognized it and invited you to come out and throw the first pitch.
Yeah, a pro ball team, the New York Mets at Citi Field, they called us and they said, we see what you're doing, feeding all these people through 100 churches, and we want to honor that. And so we're inviting you to come out. We'll let you throw the first pitch of the ball game. We'll put all your videos up on the big screens. We'll talk about you on ESPN and all these places. And at the end of the ball game, we'll invite everybody there to stay. And you can speak to them for 1 hour. We'll set you up with a platform and a microphone, and you can speak to them. So they did what they said they were going to do. At the end of the ball game, 5,000 people, their crowd estimate, stayed, and 300 publicly gave their lives to Christ. Can you imagine going to a ball game and ending up a citizen of heaven? And they've invited us back to do it again.
So that means they didn't make a mistake. They realized that they're going to do it again. It's intentional.
Yeah, well, the family, the major family, the major shareholders of the Mets, they actually went on YouTube and they listened to some of my messages and they got back to their PR people and they said, you tell that man that if he wants to call people down onto the grass, because we were told the grass is nobody touches, it's sacred, nobody touches the grass. If that man wants to call people down on the grass so that they can meet God there, they're not quite sure of the concept, you can tell him he can do that. Now, who but God? I had a security guy walk up to me. Now, we have our choir there, and we're singing worship songs, and the words to the worship songs are on these huge screens in Citi Field. 5,000 people have stayed. This man walks up to me. This is an interesting thought. He says to me, you don't know me. I'm a security guard here. But I want you to know that I have prayed for 22 years for this moment to happen in this stadium, and walked away. And I remember thinking, is it that man's prayer that you answered? Is that the reason why we're here? You know, we tend to think it's all about us and you know. But God kind of lets us know that He's answering prayers all over the place and doing things that are it's really miraculous. How else do you describe it? Like, especially in today's environment where if you put your finger in the air, you kick out a football. You know what?
I mean, that was exactly the point I was going to make. This is happening. This didn't happen in 1950. This happened right now.
Yes.
This is real time.
Real time.
In New York City.
Yes.
You cannot point to anything other than prayer. And I was thinking as you were saying that the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but they're spiritual for the tearing down of strongholds. What is the key? What is the chief weapon that we have? It is prayer.
Absolutely. In 2007, when I was praying with these same pastors, the Lord put on my heart to gather the people where the ball drops in New York City, right where the ball drops in Times Square, and pray for the future of the city. Now, we ended up 3 years later with 60,000 people attending that meeting. And Mayor Bloomberg attended and came with an entourage and stayed. He attended the prayer meeting. And he sovereignly declared each of those days prayer in the square day for New York City. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, of all people, only God could have moved his heart to do that. Because we couldn't get through the committees. Nobody can get that ground. You can't get that ground. You have to get through seven committees to get that ground, and those committees are not, they're not sympathetic to Christians.
Well, they're not quite Baptist committees, but they're tough.
Exactly. And we were 10 days away from the first event, and some of my staff came in and they said, Pastor, I think we might have to cancel because we can't even get through the first committee, and we've got seven committees to get through in 10 days. It's not going to happen. And we're going to be in a legal gathering. And I said to them, did God tell us to do this? And they said, yes, we believe that. I said, well, I know He did. So we're going to do it. Let's just do it. About 3 days later, we get a call from Mayor Bloomberg's office that he had something for us. We sent a courier. I didn't know what it was. And he brought it. And he had issued a mayoral proclamation declaring September 9th, 2007, which was our first event, officially Prayer in the Square Day for New York City.
Wow.
And so all the committees fell in 1 hour. All the committees, they had to, because it was a proclamation from the mayor. He did it for us for 3 years. And the Lord had spoken to me, do this for 3 years. It's truly amazing. That's when you pray, God speaks, and you begin to move with God. And when you read the book, I've seen civil war come to an end. I've been invited into very difficult situations and see God do a miracle.
You know, what we could spend a lifetime and never accomplish, God can do in a moment. And it's prayer.
Yes.
Prayer
yes.
is the key.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. And I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.